This one kid came into the shelter, so he was about 19 years old, and he had been through, I don't know, a bunch of crime and violence, and he was homeless, and so he got sent into this shelter. And he was like this fucking ringleader of the homeless, where at 2 or 3 a.m., when everyone's asleep, I'd see his door open and he'd walk out with speed, like he was ready. And he would go and literally bang on the doors of everyone in this shelter. So one door here, then he'd walk through the next one, then he'd go through the entire building. I would see it all on CCTV. And then he'd be stood outside of the home and he'd start smoking. And one by one, I'd see each door opened and each guy would step outside, go downstairs, and go join him smoking outside, to the point that it was kind of scary. Now we've got 15 homeless guys who've got nothing to lose, stood outside of the shelter, laughing, drinking, smoking. And that's when they'd all leave, and I'd see them walk off the CCTV. And I always used to think to myself, fuck me, imagine being outside right now. I used to feel so grateful that I was in this like locked room that they couldn't get to. I used to think, damn, imagine walking past these 15 guys like with your girlfriend or some shit. I knew what they were about to do, and you probably didn't like know what they're going to do right now. They disappear for an hour, 2 hours, and then I'd see them one by one enter back into the CCTV, and they'd have a bicycle, two bicycles, they'd have a fucking entire desktop computer in their hands. 15 guys, like these, like I don't know, these hoarders, these thieves, criminals. They would go and break into like the houses nearby, the buildings nearby, the offices, and steal as much as possible every single night. One of the guys would come back with three bicycles. He's like, he's barely holding onto them, and they'd leave it inside of the hostel. One came with like laptops. They'd empty their pockets. They've got earphones or something as well. They'd steal so much. They'd often come in and ask me if I wanted to buy them as well, but I was always saying like, no, I'm okay. And then I always felt awkward saying no to these guys. So they'd knock on my door, right? So I'm behind like a gated, like security door. Instead of pressing the buzzer, they'd knock onto it and I'd go and open the door, like, but be behind the fence. And they'd say, like, oh, yes, bro, good night. Are you having a good night, bro? And I'd be like, yeah, you guys, yeah. And they'd be like, can we come in? What? Can we come in? And what they wanted was they wanted to go past the security room that I was in to get to the kitchen and then go make themselves like whatever shitty food we had there. And I can't believe when I think back to this, I used to let them, I would open the door and have 15 of these guys who had nothing to lose, who were literally criminals, who had just robbed people. And I'd let them all literally walk right next to me to get to the kitchen, which was supposed to be locked during the nighttime. It was always so interesting. They'd go in almost like locusts, where any food we had in the kitchen at the time, you know, this shit food, it'd be like bran flakes, cereal or some shit, milk, they would rinse through all of it like fast, like locusts, that there'd be nothing left. I remember one day we had a new person come into the shelter, and my manager comes up to me as she's finishing her shift, I'm about to start mine, and she says, Hamza, can you speak Pakistani? And I said, like, I can speak Urdu, that's the language, right? And she says, oh, then you can speak to this guy, this man, he's just come in and he doesn't speak any English, and we need to tell him the rules, like, you know, no smoking, no whatever, inside of the rooms. So I say, oh yeah, finally, I can speak Urdu, it's fine. So I go and see him in like the CCTV. He's just sat there in the kitchen, and I take like the little rule book with me, sit down and speak to him in my broken Urdu, like assalamu alaikum, aap kaise ho, and we kind of understand each other. Like he speaks a slightly different language. He spoke like Pashto or something, which is kind of similar, kind of not, right? But it's enough to communicate, but he didn't speak English. So I go in and speak to him in my language. He kind of understands, and I tell him, okay, here's the rules and stuff. He asks me a question. He says, I'm in pain, and he starts like rubbing his stomach. And he says that he's really hungry. And I look around and like all of the food that we can give out in one day, it's already been rinsed by like the criminals who, you know, have ate it all like locusts. So I tell him like, oh, sorry, you know, like tomorrow morning we put more out. And he just looks so sad. You know, I'm trying to figure out like what's his story. Why the fuck is he here? I go in and ask my manager, and oh, we have like a solicitor, almost kind of like a woman who looks after these people more. And I'm asking them, and you know, they say like, oh yeah, his story's really weird. He's not on the system at all. He was just dropped off at the town hall in Manchester, like, you know, the government building. Someone just dropped him off there. And so he wasn't on the system or anything. He's got like some mental disability. He's got like schizophrenia or something. He sees people. He's always whispering to himself and stuff. They said the hardest thing with him is that since he's not on the system, they don't have enough files to actually get him government welfare. So all these people inside of the homeless shelter, they actually get some kind of benefits. They get some kind of money from the government. They said for him, they already had tried to apply, but it got rejected. So he had genuinely zero income, like genuinely zero money at all. Because when you think about the homeless, you probably didn't realize this, but you know when you see homeless people on the street, that's just one kind of homeless. Actually, most of the homeless people just don't have what's called a permanent residence, but they're moving around from like government's kind of council houses to this place. But most people who are homeless actually do have some kind of income, like government welfare. It's only the total, like genuine total fucking crackheads that you see on the street. But like most of the homeless people are just like this guy, right? And yeah, they tell me that he's got no income at all and that, you know, he's at risk because he's got genuinely zero fucking money right now. So they leave, I'm about to do my shift, and I can't help but just to think about him. And honestly, he looked physically like my father. I think that's why I thought about him more than like any of the other guys, because he had a little bit of like similar mannerisms. He was like the same height as my dad. He looked a little bit similar. So I feel like there was a, I don't know, a level of like connection that was being built up there. For the following nights, whilst I'm doing my shift, me and him would start speaking a bit. Like he'd come into the room that I was being sat in, you know, he'd knock on and just speak to me. And I knew for a fact he was just lonely as fuck. It's like he didn't fit into this place. Everyone else was a total fucking crackhead, thieves, criminals, and he was just like this guy who wasn't supposed to be here. And I remember one particular night, he was like, it was late, it was 2 a.m and he was like going towards the kitchen, or you know, he was walking towards somewhere, he was on the whatever it was, and I could see him on the CCTV. And that's when I saw the fucking ringleader kid come out of his room and start banging on everyone's doors. And I see like 15 of these fucking criminal guys walk past our guy here, and you'll say something to him, and they have like a brief conversation, like in the home, like on the landing outside of the front door. I don't know what they said, but yeah, like they kind of spoke to him a little bit, but then they all go inside. He's not like mixing with them at all. He goes to his room. So he doesn't fucking fit in this kind of environment. They all go and steal and stuff. He's just stayed in his room. On one of the first nights I met him, maybe the second or the third time we speak, and he tells me what would be translated as like, most people don't feel the pain that I feel because I'm hungry all the time. He said something like that, and I felt so fucking awful. Bearing in mind, like, I was broke as fuck around this time. You know, I'm working £8 or £9 an hour, night shifts a few times a week. My income was, like, literally about £800, like, less than $1,000 as a grown fucking man. And I had an apartment in the city and stuff. So basically, I had, like, almost no free money. But I felt so bad for him that I started to go to the nearby store and buy him food every time I had a shift. Because this guy was hungry. He was genuinely hungry. I could see it from his face. Yeah, so I'd go nearby and get him, like, I'm so ashamed to say this because I knew he was Muslim, but the stuff I would get him wasn't even halal. You know, imagine you go into a store and there's like microwave chicken curry or something, and obviously I had a feeling like it's not going to be halal, it's not going to be like butchered like how Muslims would want it. So I used to feel guilty as fuck, but I was like, I didn't know what else to do, like what, like either that or he's just hungry as fuck. And so I'd buy him these like microwave meals, which I knew were just, you know, like low quality and shit, but I'd buy him that and then come in and he'd like make it in the microwave. Imagine it's kind of like a microwave box of like chicken and rice or something. And I'd ask him, you know, is it okay or something? And he'd say like, yes, like it's amazing, it's fine. I'd ask him which one was his favorite, and he said all of them. Like he genuinely was fucking hungry. But yeah, I remember I used to do this every day, like not every day, but like, you know, every time I had a shift. And I would feel guilty as fuck because I never even fucking told him that like I don't think it's halal. Like, you know, it's in like a white Western shop, so I assumed that they didn't butcher the thing. It was always chicken, it was never like pork or anything. But yeah, I always used to feel really guilty for that. But I used to think like, what could I do? Like I don't, you know what I mean? So yeah, I'd be feeding him there. Every time I'd go and buy like the box, you know, I'd get him like that. I'd get him like, I don't know, some snack or some shit as well. And it'd be like £7, £8, £9. I didn't even have the fucking money for it. Like I literally would have like £100 in my bank account and I'd be buying this guy just food that I felt like I couldn't afford, or food that was basically even better than the food that I was eating at the time. I'd be getting him that, and we started to form like a little bit of a bond. Like he'd come in on my shifts and we'd drink like tea together and just talk, and I'd be asking him like more and more personal questions, because I heard from my manager and the solicitor who worked in our little shelter that, you know, he's from Pakistan. He was born in Pakistan, but then he moved to Italy. He has an Italian passport. He seems to have a family but in Pakistan, but he's not going back for some reason. And they made it out like, oh yeah, if he goes back, he'll be like a really bad thing, maybe because of his mental health, because he's got schizophrenia or something like that. So I used to grill him. I used to ask him, like, I couldn't understand, why would you want to be in this shelter and not in Pakistan? I'd ask him, like, why don't you go back to Pakistan? I saw a picture of like a boy on his phone. Like he had a phone, like not like a nice iPhone or something, but you know, some shitty Android phone or something. I saw like a picture of a boy and I asked him like, oh yeah, aapke beta hai, like is this your son? And he said yes. And it would blow my mind. I was like, how the fuck do you have a wife and children? Like he said he had a wife as well. How do you have wife and children and and you're here, why wouldn't you go back? Even to be like broke as fucking Pakistan would be better than this, right? You're next to fucking criminals and you don't realize like how bad your situation is. You don't have any fucking income. Like the biggest thing that he didn't understand, but that my manager kept repeating to me, was that you don't form a relationship with these people because they'll be moved out of this shelter at some point. This was only supposed to be like a temporary shelter, like where I worked, right? It's called a temporary accommodation, which meant that like these homeless people would be moved in for a few weeks before they'd be moved to somewhere hopefully more permanent. But they could only be moved to somewhere more permanent if they had government welfare, like what's called universal credit, on their profile. And he couldn't get that because I don't know if like what reason he had been denied for it. He couldn't get it. So my manager said it's going to be a very tricky situation because he's basically indebted to the council for his stay here. Like if you didn't realize how fucked this is, even in a first world country, even in a system like this where, you know, he's in a temporary accommodation and stuff, you know, they still charge the homeless people for these places. It was still like £400 a month, but it's that their government welfare pays for it. But she said on their system, it will show as this being a debt on his account, which means that they won't offer him another place after this, which means that when he's randomly removed from this house, he'll be on the street homeless, and he's not had that before. When I finally understood that, that's when shit started to get serious, because I'm thinking, I've seen like, you know, people come in and out, they get moved and stuff randomly. So I'm thinking, oh fuck, like we've literally got a deadline that at one point he's randomly going to be taken out of this hostel and he won't be offered another place. And imagine this guy who can't even speak fucking English walking around like the city wondering like what the hell is happening. He'll just stand outside and not be allowed in or some shit. And then COVID starts and widespread panic starts occurring. People are buying up the fucking toilet paper in the stores. Everyone's going like weird. I remember me and my girlfriend were taking it so seriously that we would buy like antiseptic wipes and like wipe like the door and shit when we came back in. It was like, you know, people just didn't know what the fuck was happening. Obviously, I didn't realize like the other side of the argument back then. I only knew like what the government wanted me to know. Yeah, so we took it so seriously. It was so scary. And I was a key worker. So in the UK, we had something called key worker, where basically you kept on working through COVID. You didn't get like the free pay or anything else. Everyone else got to basically sit at home and watch fucking Netflix. I still had to go travel around the fucking city to try and help this guy and go to work and stuff. So when it gets to COVID, now I'm thinking, wait, this is even fucking worse. He's going to be on the street in COVID. Like who the fuck knows like what the fuck coronavirus even is. That's when I start to take it upon myself to try and help this guy. So I go onto my laptop and instead of doing my own business work, I start trying to like apply for his benefits again. I tell him to bring his like belongings to the office space, and I go through like his entire bag of like his random documents that he's got that he doesn't even know how to read or anything, because he doesn't read or write English. I'm going through them. I find his birth certificate. Okay, that's useful. Here's his Italian passport. You know, I'm going through. Then I go onto the government website to try and apply in his name again, and I'm applying, rejected. Government websites are so shit as well. Imagine how infuriating it is that you click on like, you know, some government website about helping like a homeless person, and it says like, oh, if you're trying to help a homeless person, click this link. You click on the link and nothing fucking happens. It's like the link's just dead. Like that happens so often, I can't explain to you. There's a number, I call the number, no one fucking picked up for literally over a week. I'm doing this every single day, I promise you. I called at least 15-20 numbers, not a single fucker picked up at all. Now I'm getting stressed. Now I'm like, you know, the whole fucking country's like panicking over this weird fucking coronavirus thing that's going around. The homeless are at risk like crazy. He might be removed at any point. I'm broke as fuck as it is. My relationship's crumbled. I haven't spoke to my family in a year almost. I've got a weird addiction. I wake up in the middle of the night with night sweats so bad that my own fucking girlfriend is pissed off and she doesn't want to sleep next to me because of how genuinely like fucking drenched I am at night because of like the stress that I'm going through, that I would start sleeping on towels. I would literally sleep on a towel because of how much I would sweat at night with the stress of what the fuck was just going on here. I'm applying and it gets rejected. The website doesn't fucking work. I call the number, no one's picking up. It's getting weirder and weirder on the streets. I walk into work and my manager says that he's been removed. But she said that to make it easier for us, the council understood the situation. And so to basically trick him, they got him one night in a hotel nearby, basically to tell him like, oh yeah, that's where you're going to. So he got one night in this random hotel that was nearby. You know, he took all of his stuff there. And then obviously the next day he was like removed from that room. You know, the housekeeper probably would have came in and told him like, oh yeah, you need to go downstairs, your stay's over. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? Like he's been removed and he's randomly like probably still in that hotel right now, like, you know, just arguing with them, not knowing what the hell is going on. I remember already knowing at this point when my manager was leaving that this was going to be like a very chaotic night. And I knew that I was alone during it as well. And trying, you know, like, forget about it, thinking, okay, it's done, you know, whatever. I'll try not to think about him now because he's been removed. It's not really my responsibility. The phone rings and it's him, and he's just speaking gibberish. Like, he's not even speaking like our language anymore. He's just fucking, he's just like that, just making noises. I know that it's him. And I say in Urdu, I say like, ap hotel de ho. He doesn't understand a word of English, so he didn't even understand what hotel was. But I kind of eventually get it out that he's there right now. My manager had already told me that, by the way, if you bring anyone inside of this room, like, you get fired for that. And I need this job. But I, you know, I knew that during all this period that I would be looking back to this moment of my life as a testament to the kind of man that I am. I knew that this was my experience, like my first real experience of helping a guy who could never help me back, just because that's what you're supposed to do. So I take my keys, I close the office, and I go walk to the hotel that he's in. Actually, I walk in, and the person who works at the hotel, like at the front desk, they kind of look at me weird, and they say like, are you with him? And they point over to the corner, and he's there, the homeless guy's there, on a chair. He's rocking forwards and back like this, like as if he's fucking traumatized. He's holding onto a fucking box of cereal, like not like this, sorry, like this. Like it's his prize fucking possession, like it's his baby. And he's rocking forwards and back because he doesn't understand what the fuck's going on. His most dear possession was a box of cereal. And it wasn't even a full box either. It was like literally half gone. It was the ones that we used to leave out in the homeless shelter. And he probably just like took it with him. He sees me and, you know, he instantly looks a little bit more relieved. And I tell him like, come on, let's go. Like, I grab his bag and he comes with me and I bring him into the shelter and just kind of sit him down on the couch there. He's like rocking forwards and back. And then he asked me like, can he just lay down? And I say, yeah, fine. So he randomly just like falls asleep on the couch right in front of me. Maybe he didn't sleep at nighttime or something. And I'm thinking like, what the fuck do I do? I can't just keep him here. I'm gonna lose my job. What do I do? And I start calling all the numbers. Now I'm not even calling like, you know, the government number. I'm calling like the non-emergency helpline. I'm calling like in the UK, it's like 111 or something. No one's picking up. Not a single time did anyone pick up at all. I'm pissed. I'm thinking like, what the fuck has happened to my country that you can't even get some assistance in a moment like this? I go onto the websites, you know, there's new websites for like the homeless in COVID. No support whatsoever. And that's when an idea pops into my mind. I go onto Reddit and I go onto the subreddit of my city. I go onto like r/Manchester and I post about it there. Maybe the post might still be there on like an old Reddit account, actually, if you wanted to go and try and find it. Like, but I posted about like, I'm in this situation. There's a homeless guy here, this and this and this. I don't have money to help him. He's in this room right now. For weeks, I'd been trying to get any kind of help from the UK government and I got no response. Within 1 hour, I got 50 comments or however many it was, with like 5+ people offering to pay to like get him a stay in a hotel. And one of the people, this kind woman, still, I'll say her name was Emma. She gives me her number and says like, let's talk about it. So I call, I think we FaceTimed and I literally showed her and she was like, oh, okay. Like, I just wanted to make sure you were telling the truth. So I just wanted to see. And she's like, she could tell I was telling the truth. So she starts going online to try and find like a place for him. And she said she's found like this bed and breakfast that's only a mile away, that it's fairly cheap. So she gets him 2 nights there. And I'm like instantly relieved. You know what? No. I'm not even gonna lie to you. I wasn't even that relieved. You know why? Because I just thought like 2 nights, but like, I'm like, what the fuck else? Like, all I'm doing now is just prolonging the pain. I'm still gonna have to figure something out, right? But it's like, whatever, at least it's something for right now, like this chaotic moment. Because I thought in my mind that if I get him out of this office space fast enough, then at least I won't lose my job, hopefully. You know, like, hopefully my manager doesn't realize that I brought him in here. There's a chance that she does and I get fired, because it's like, you know, you're breaking a pretty important safety rule. But hopefully, like, I don't get fired and I keep this job because I need the money and stuff. So I get sent the details for the place that Emma has got him, and I book an Uber for him using basically the last of my money so that it gets him over there. And we kind of like tell him what to say. We talk to the person who owns the bed and breakfast and explain the situation to them. And they're asking me weird questions. They're like, is he dangerous? Is he going to do anything? You know, because like I told them the truth. I was like, he's homeless. He doesn't understand English. He's got schizophrenia. I still didn't even know what that meant, honestly. Like, you know, I'd heard like he's got it. I didn't even know what it meant. I was always wondering, like, would he have the chance to like attack me or something? They're asking all these questions and I understand they're concerned because it was like a family home that they were basically renting out like rooms in. So I totally understood. And I said, no, it's like, it's fine and stuff. And obviously with COVID, people were just being weird. And so the family was quite anxious, but they let him come in. We paid for the, Emma paid for the room for two nights. And then it's enough space for me to kind of like unwind a little bit. And I remember just feeling so fucking exhausted after like this few hours of all of this happening, but also that I still had to figure out what to do two fucking days from now. So the next day, like I finish my shift, I go home and I speak to the homeless guy, I speak to the woman and stuff, and we're trying to figure out what to do. I go on Airbnb because I'm thinking like, yeah, the government's not going to help us. Like, what if we keep doing what we've just done? And I look for like 1 month stays because I heard like if you get an Airbnb for a month, it's fairly cheap. And I saw a few places that actually were quite cheap. They're like £300 for an entire month in the city. And so I start thinking like, damn, like all we need is £300. Like, I'm pretty sure Emma, this woman, she paid probably like £100 for these two nights. But there's a few like random homes that you can get a room in for £300 for the entire month. And so I just try my luck. I call up Emma and I just say to her, like, we could potentially do this. I don't have the money, but like we could potentially do it. And I remember her saying, well, you know what? I was saving up for a holiday, but it doesn't look like we're going to go on one anytime soon because of COVID. So I'll do this. I'll pay for it. And I'm just thinking like, wow, what a sweet woman and everything. And she pays. She speaks to the person on Airbnb. It's like a private room inside of a shared house. They're fine with it. The location's a few miles away. I still remember I have £84 in my bank account. We get it confirmed. So it's almost a moment of celebration of like, oh, okay, he's got a month stay somewhere. That's given us so much more time. We just need to like get him there, right? Because you know, telling him the address isn't going to fucking work. I have to go take it myself. But before we do that, me and my girlfriend, the next morning, we go to the store, the Aldi, and we go and do like a £40 shop because we know he's going to need food and, you know, like toiletries and everything. Like, it was very thoughtful, like if I may say so myself, but I think it was my girlfriend's idea anyway. She was a sweet girl. This was like, you know, my ex from literally 5 years ago or something. And yes, we go, we do this big shop with like food, with soap and whatever. Get all that into a few bags. Then I get an Uber to where he's staying right now. Go inside. I took my laptop. I go and check all of his files. Go and apply for the benefits thing again. Grab him. We load up the car. Then the car takes us to the other side of Manchester where the new 1 month house is. And I remember how weird it felt because the streets were just empty. This was when lockdown just started and everyone was taking it quite seriously in the UK. It was weird. It was like I was traveling the most during this time, going from place to place in the city. It was almost like a weird, like dystopian reality where when the whole city, the whole country was silent and locked down, I was moving around and on this mission to try and save this guy's life. We get to the home and it's fine. It's not like nice or anything, but it's like, you know, we get in and it's a moment of success for us. We're actually quite happy. And he's like asking like, wait, this is for him. And how long will I stay here? I say 1 month. And he doesn't even kind of believe it, but he seems like quite happy about it. I give him all of like the bags of groceries that I got and he's like super happy. He's thanking me and stuff. And, you know, I handshake him. And I remember I took a selfie. I won't show you, like I have posted it before, but like I took a selfie of me and him because I had a feeling that I'd tell this story in the future. But he's only here for a month. We still have, you know, work to do. He still feels like my responsibility. So I start coming over to the home with my laptop every day. I've literally got about £30 left in my bank account, by the way. And each Uber here is costing about £8. And I come over the next day, organize his entire bag of like random papers and letters he's got, and start applying for the benefits again. And literally this time I'm applying for universal credit. And I'm begging. One thing I should just say, just to put this into perspective, my mental health was fucked at this point, right? I had a weed addiction. I had a bad relationship, everything, right? Like I said, these websites to use, they were just so fucking hard that it was never clear of like what I was even needing to apply for, what help I even needed. Did I need a solicitor? Did I need like some mental health support advisor or some shit? It took me so long to realize that I needed to apply for a government welfare type in the UK called universal credit. I had been applying for all these random ones called PIP, you know, like these mental health ones and everything. But I applied for this one and you were able to put in like messages in the chat. And so I explained the entire thing in detail, which I think was the first time I was able to actually explain the detail of like, no, I'm not actually this guy. I'm applying on his behalf, but I'm not some like solicitor, some professional. I'm just a fucking kid who's like just trying to help here. And then I remember that he had an interview booked the next day that they wanted to speak to him. So obviously they would need me there. They couldn't get a translator. So they asked me to be the translator and everything because he doesn't speak English. I do. I speak Urdu. Like, so me and him can communicate, then I can speak to them. I wake up the next day. I get the Uber to his place. I've got less than £20 left in my bank account. And I made a mistake, because once I get to his place and I open up the laptop and I go onto the government welfare website, I see that the interview's been fucking cancelled, and I'm literally so upset, thinking like, I just came here for no reason and I've got another £8 Uber back home. I've basically got no fucking money now. I'm upset, but I kind of understand, like, you know, shit happens. And then they book the interview for the next day. The next day I wake up, double check the interview's still on. Yep, it still is, all good. I take the Uber, you know, I'm kind of anxious, like, I hope they don't cancel it again, I'd be so pissed. And I get over to his place, getting ready for the interview. I open up the laptop on the government welfare website and it just says accepted. They just stopped the interview and just accepted his application. And I click on the details and it says that his income now is £732 per month and that they're paying for this home. They had contacted the landlord who had rented him this home that we were currently in, you know, the one that Emma paid like £300 for, and they had already organized to continue paying him £300 a month. And now he gets £700 a month cash as like income as well. He's officially not homeless anymore. I can't even believe it. He doesn't even believe me. We take pictures, screenshots, everything. I message my girlfriend. It's like hype as fuck. It's like a done and dusted moment of accomplishments. If I was a little bitch, I'd end the story here. And so that you think I'm some kind of hero who helped this guy and it was so sweet and Hamza's amazing. What actually happened was that he needed me for all kinds of things in life. I go home feeling like, oh, this is done, this is awesome. And then he calls me and he just wants to like chat because he's lonely. And I won't lie to you, like I didn't really want to speak to him. You know what I mean? It's a guy who's got schizophrenia. We barely speak the same language. But he was so lonely, he had no one else other than me. Then he calls me loads, 7 times. And he says that his card's not working. I'm like, oh, fuck, like, what the hell's happening now? You know, I wasn't even going to help him. But then he says he needs to go get his medication, that he needs to pay for it. And randomly, I hear like a shuffling on the phone. And I hear like, no, I can't take that. I can't take that. And like a woman picks up. She's like, hello. And I'm like, hi, who's this? And she's like, we work at Boots, like this place to get medication. This guy is here. His card's not working. We can't give it to him without his card working. He needs to pay like £8 to get his medication for his schizophrenia or some shit. I'm like, what the fuck is this? You know, like, fuck, why is his card not working? He can't get his medication. I put the phone back onto him and I ask him, like, how important is it? Like, do you need it and stuff? And he says, yes, I do. Like, I need it. It's for, like, you know, my health or something. So I'm like, oh, fuck, like, you know, I don't know why his card's not working. I'm going to go have to pay. I speak to the woman again and tell her, like, is there anything we can do? Can you just give it to him for free? Can I pay over the phone or whatever? She's like, no, like, you have to pay, like, normally and stuff. So then I'm like, what the fuck? So I get the location, then I get an Uber with basically my last amount of money. I remember actually that knowing that I didn't have enough money for the way home. So I remember telling my girlfriend that she would have to order me an Uber from her phone, or maybe she had to send me money. Or actually, no, you know what? I think I was so brain dead that I literally, like, imagine that situation. I get enough money to go to see him, but I knew I didn't have enough money to get an Uber back. My brain was so fucked. I was so stressed and everything that my solution to that problem of not having enough money for an Uber back home was to tell my girlfriend that she needed to get ready to order me one from her phone instead of telling her to just transfer me like £10 from her bank account. Like, I was so brain dead because of how much stress and sleep deprivation I was going through. And yeah, I get there and he meets me outside of like this, like, and we're in like the ends of Manchester, by the way. We're in like the ghetto part, like, you know, the poor part of Manchester and everything. And like, I don't even feel safe there at all. But yeah, I get out of the car, we go into this medication place and I pay for it with my card and it works now. Then we go back to his place and I'm like wondering, like, why is your card not working? We call up his bank because I'm thinking they've frozen it or something. And they ask, like, you know, all these details I'm trying to get from him. It's like, imagine you're trying to help this guy who doesn't speak English, who's got mental health problems. He's not even like coherently speaking most of the time. And they ask you, like, what's his middle name? You're trying to convert that into a language that you're kind of fluent but not perfect in, and he doesn't understand a word of English. So when I ask him, like, apke middle name kya hai, and he doesn't understand what the term middle means, because I have to say in English, I don't know what it is in Urdu. It was like, it's hard as fuck to try and figure out what the fuck to do. I'm stressed as fuck and everything. Eventually we speak, and then they put us on hold, and they check again, and they're like, his account's not frozen on our side. Have you just frozen it on the app? And I'm like, what? So go on his phone, open up the Hollyfax app, and you know there's like, you can freeze like your card on the app in cases your card has been stolen. And it's just turned on, and I turn it off and I'm like, oh, it'll work now. And I have to try and explain it to him, like, don't press buttons, like, you did this yourself, you just probably accidentally pressed it. And he understands, whatever. Then I get back home, and for the next few days, like, he's calling me 5 times a day, 10 times a day, sometimes to just talk, sometimes to just, like, because he needs, like, you know, to help with this other thing or this other thing. And it occurs to me, I'm like, I did what I wanted to do. Like, I've basically saved him from being homeless. He's officially not homeless anymore. But someone like this will always need help. Like, he'll always need help with everything. And I don't want to do that. I need to go focus on myself. I'm in my own journey and everything. And it wasn't a quick decision at all. It was literally like over a month. At this point, I moved back home. So I left the city. I moved back home to Warrington, but I was still checking his universal credit. I was still checking, like, it was government welfare, still taking his calls and needing to like advise him on things. But eventually I remember even my mom, she looked at me, she was like, wait, you're still helping him? You're not even in Manchester anymore. And that's when it clicked. And I was like, I have went above and beyond. I didn't even work that job anymore, by the way. Like, I quit that job like over a month, 2 months ago. This story that I'm telling you happened over about 4 or 5 months of fucking stress, to the point that now it's summertime and it's like, you know, the middle of COVID. I'm back home with my family. I left the city. I had a breakup and everything, and I'm still helping him. I'm still taking his call, still trying to figure out what to do. I've been, you know, messaging the universal credit, the website, trying to find out if we can get some kind of like solicitor or support person to help him. And there's like nothing like that. And it just occurs to me, like, I can't always help this guy. And so I decide, and this is how you know this story is really fucking real, because it doesn't make me look good, I decide to cut him off. I think the only thing that I can do is if I just block him from everything. And I just kind of, whatever, I just don't want to think about it anymore. So the last thing I do is like I log into the government website, the Universal Credit, and I send them a massive message saying like, it's me again, I can't do this anymore, you know, I'm just a young guy, I need to go and like live my life, I can't keep helping him. I've tried to get him like a mental health coach or assistant, whatever they call it, solicitor or whatever, but no one's replied. I've tried for all of these government things, but no one's helping. And you know, I'm pouring my heart out into this fucking message to these people who work in like universal credit government welfare, and they reply fairly quickly and they say, okay Hamza, we understand, thank you for your help so far. Oh, thank you for all of the help that you've done. It was just like that. It was like, oh, okay. Like, life goes on. I go on my phone and I block him from everything. The part of this story that I've never actually told before, because I've told this story before, but there's one more part, which is that I actually got a text from the guy, you know, the landlord who owns the home that he was in. And this was like 2 months later, 3 months later. I had, you know, this is when I had a few hundred subscribers on YouTube. I was only thinking about YouTube. COVID's still around, but I'm like training with the gymnastic rings. This is maybe when, like, you probably didn't watch me just yet, but this is like the early days of my YouTube career and everything. I get a text and he says, hey, it's me, it's the landlord. This is where the homeless guy is. I won't say his name, but this is where the homeless guy is. And there's been an emergency. Please call me immediately. I click on his name and I block him as well. You can say I'm an asshole for this. I just wanted to tell you the truth. That's exactly what happened. And then I never heard anything of this situation ever again. When I look back, honestly, it's like, it's weird. It's like, I don't really even feel proud of helping him. I just feel like I did the bare minimum. But I kind of know objectively that I really did more than the bare minimum there. I had a girl ask me recently. It was a strange question. She asked me, do you think you're a good person? And I said, yes. You know, I saw flashes of this moment. I saw flashes of the guys that I'd help, you know, with my YouTube work, and the guys who've come up to me and said that they didn't kill themselves because of me. The guys who've said that self-improvement changed their life and I got them onto self-improvement. And it's interesting that the girl actually said to me, I don't think you are. And I just thought to myself, like, if only you knew. Like, I think especially to girls, maybe I put on this a little bit of this sort of like alpha Chad, you know, cool boy mannerisms and shit. But I don't think a lot of people know that, like, I really do have like a sweet side to myself where I've really helped like a lot of people, even when it cost me, even when I had nothing, even when I knew that, you know, this guy would never be able to pay me back. Yeah. So I don't know, like, you can think I'm so arrogant, egotistical guy. Like, people comment that shit about me all the time, that, oh, his ego's huge, he's arrogant, he's this. And maybe that's true, to be honest, it probably is. But I have sides to me that, like, I often don't speak about. And just for today, I felt like speaking about it. So I appreciate you listening. I don't know if there was, like, lessons from this that you got to take away. I hope it was valuable in some ways, if maybe there's some kind of lesson learned or insight or action step, if not only to just get to know me more. Do the hard work, especially when you don't feel like it. Mwah.